Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. We have another maybe less than 1 minute before 3 o'clock, but we can get ready. So today is April Fool Day, first of April 2018, and it's also a Sunday. We are having our Sunday class at Wu Ping Ching Sir. Today is lesson 71 of our 6 Patriya Vaikom Sutta. So we can get ready, compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, then virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Okay. Namo Bhansi Sī Jīyā Mōni Fō Namo Bhansi Sī Jīyā Mōni Fō Namo Bhansi Sī Jīyā Mōni Fō Namo Quan Sī Pūsā Namo Quan Sī Pūsā Namo Quan Sī Pūsā Namo Fō Pūsā Namo Fō Pūsā Namo Fō Pūsā Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā Buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi Svakāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghaṃ namāmi Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo attassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Pānātipātā vairamani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Ādīnā dānā vairamani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Kāmesu micchācārā vairamani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Mūsāvādā vairamani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Sūrā mirirāyā majjhapamādatthānā vairamani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi sādhu 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 Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhaṃ pujeme. Dhammaṃ pujeme. Sanghaṃ pujeme. Okay, you all can be seated. will commence our sutta class. So we are at page 350. Okay, maybe I will read to you again the commentary. Opening verse, yeah. Okay, turn to the page on opening verse first. We will recite the opening verse. Verse for opening a sutta. Okay. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Then we can turn the page. 350. But I will go back one page. Page 349. Starting from the commentary. According to Xuanhua's commentary, he said, "You are right," said the master, "and your verse is not bad at all. You should know that my morality, samadhi, and wisdom are not the same as that of Sensu. His teaching is for people of the lesser vehicle, means those who are not going for supreme Buddhahood. The supreme Buddhahood vehicle is the ultimate vehicle, or they call it the supreme vehicle. Here the master described the people of great wisdom for whom his teaching is intended. They have awakened to the self nature. This one you must take a note. Because for Huineng's teaching is he take you directly to the self nature, the true mind. He don't want you to waste time on the mundane mind. So this part is very important. And those who can develop this type of cultivation or understanding, they are the one who is capable of going the supreme vehicle way. And most of these are bodhisattva ways. So this part is very important. They have awakened to their self nature. He said, and they don't even entertain the notion of bodhi, nirvana, or the liberation of knowledge and vision. None of these worldly dharma exists for them. Not a single thing remains. So the supreme vehicle is totally different. They have penetrated true emptiness. That's why the understanding is totally different. Then there's two stanza. Not one Dhamma is established, and yet 10,000 Dhammas are empty. Then the commentary goes on to explain. Because such people do not set up the notion of a single Dhamma, they can set up the 10,000 Dhammas. Although not a single Dhamma exists, the 10,000 Dhammas are present, all the same. So no different. If you understand this principle, you may become a Buddha on the spot, means immediately. Then you may call it Bodhi, Nirvana, or liberation of knowledge and vision. You may call it anything you like. But first, you must understand it. If you don't understand it, you can't call it anything at all. So understanding is very important. Wisdom is very important. People of genuine enlightenment who have understood the mind, understanding the mind is very important. Genuine enlightenment means genuine liberation of mind. So you will know the two types of mind. Then those who have understood the mind and seen the nature can establish Dhamma or not establish them. That's why for those who have established the Dhamma or the awakening, they don't have to remember anything. They can manifest anytime. They can understand anytime. They don't have to prepare. So whether you establish Dhamma or not establish Dhamma is up to them. They come and go without obstruction. Means their mind is free. They just accord and flow. You say, I am this way too. If I want to come to the Buddhist lecture hall, I come. If I want to go, I go. What's wrong? The six patriarchs are speaking of freedom over birth and death. It's not about freedom of movement alone. With this kind of freedom, if you want to live, you live. If you want to die, you can die. Any place, any time. So this type of being, they know the form of mind is not real. So to them, birth and death, no problem. As I last time I told you, you will reach a point of the cultivation where you know, even this moment, if this form of mind were to separate, no problem at all. You won't go and think, ayo, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, I haven't left behind the woods. There is no such thing. Everything is not what you think. It's universal characteristics, empty nature. So no reality. Whether you around or you not around, it doesn't make any difference. Then the world is still the world. So he gave an example. He said, like the third patriarch, who died on his own will, hanging by one hand from a tree. That's why I often say to you, everything's okay. If you are master of this, you hold the power of birth and death in your hand. Live or die as you please. No one can stop you. Freedom to come and go. It's not like you're coming and going from the Buddhist lecture hall. So they are referring to the complete understanding of the mind, birth and death of the mind. People who see the nature function correctly and speak appropriately, seeing all transformation body as integral with the self nature. This sentence is very profound. So the first one is, people who see the nature, means if you can see your own true nature, if you can realize that true nature or the true mind, they function correctly. See, this is the first characteristic. Then they will speak appropriately. Then they will see all transformation body as integral with the self nature. So this functional body or transformation body are your various type of transformation body. Every life you come, you got one segment of your transformation body. So all of these are integral part of your self nature. Where from there it manifests. So your karmic nature is a summation of all this moment to moment of thought process that arise when you come in all this segmented life or transformation niche body. Then seeing all transformation body as integral with the self nature, this understanding will be there. They don't need to think, they just speak because it comes directly from the nature. They speak from the heart. But they always speak with principle, means right understanding. If someone asks you about the heavens, and you reply, on earth there are mountains and rivers, or you ask, was a horse, and you say, sorry, if they ask, what's a horse, and you say, oxen have two horns, you are just confusing the issue and going against common sense. People who see the nature obtain independence, just like Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. The spiritual power that they obtain are the six spiritual powers. The heavenly eye, the heavenly ear, the knowledge of others, thought, the knowledge of former life, the knowledge of extinction of outflow, and psychic power. So this one is what they call the spiritual penetration. Not much use. One who has obtained the samadhi of playfulness sings, but not like other singers. He eats, but not like other people. For example, he may say, lunchtime, let's eat, and then run to the table and eat every morsel of food inside. Then he will say, the food is still in the kitchen. When everyone looked at the kitchen, the food is still there. He didn't really eat it after all. There is a lot of fun. So this one is Xuanhua's way of expressing the samadhi of playfulness. Okay, then the next part is the sutta part. This one is, I think, Zicheng, is it? Zicheng. Zicheng asked the master further, what is meant by not establishing Dhamma? The master replied, when your self-nature is free from error, obstruction, and confusion, when wisdom is present in every thought, contemplating and shedding illumination, and when you are constantly apart from the Dhamma mark, and are free and independent, both horizontally and vertically, then what is there to be established? In the self-nature, in self-enlightenment, in sudden enlightenment, and in sudden cultivation, there is no degree. Therefore, not a single Dhamma is established. All Dhamma are still and extinct. How can there be stages? Zicheng made obeisance and attended on the master's day and night without laziness. He was a native of Taiho in Jizhou. Taihe in Jizhou. Okay, we go through the commentaries. When there is nothing in your self-nature which is obstructive or confused, what is there to be established? Confusion means upside down. You should not think that if your hand points to the earth, it is upside down. Upside down, down. And if you raise it above your head, it is right side up. There is actually no such thing as upside down or right side up. Prajna is present in every thought, contemplating the shedding illumination. Similarly, the master said earlier, you should know that the self nature constantly generates wisdom. Further, you should be separate from any attachment to Dhamma, Dhamma marks, and then you will be free to come and go. Vertically, if you want to jump, jump. Horizontally, if you want to move, sideways, go ahead. Ascend into the heavens and or plunge into the hell. Visit the western paradise of the eastern crystal. Azure world. If you can go anywhere, and always be in accord with Dhamma. So what Dhamma is there to be established? That is why the Master said that not a single Dhamma is established. You should enlighten your self-nature by yourself. If you are enlightened immediately, we will cultivate immediately. Sorry. If you are enlightened immediately, you will cultivate immediately, and there will be no question of sudden or gradual stages of progress. Therefore, no Dhamma are established. All Dhammas are empty, marked with still extinction. How can you arrange them in stage or in stages according to number one, number two, and so on? Hearing the Master's instruction, the former, they call him a spy from Sun Siu's place, defected and was converted to the Master's teaching. He changed his mind and reformed his conduct. That is called go straight. He did whatever the patriarch told him to do, no matter how difficult, because he knew that the sixth patriarch had become a patriarch by doing beetle things, trashing rice at Huang Mei Mountain for almost 8 months. So he thought, I had an opportunity to serve a patriarch, and I should work diligently. So this part is the commentary part. Okay, at least we cover that chapter. Then next one is about bhikkhu. How to pronounce this? Ji what? Zhe. Ji zhe. Zhe. Ji zhe. Bhikkhu ji zhe. Okay, bhikkhu ji zhe, a native of Jiangxi. Is it Jiangxi? Jiangxi. Had the family name Chang. Zhang, yes. And the personal name Xing Zhang. Xing Zhang. Xing Chang. Oh, Xing Chang. Zhang Xing Chang. Okay. As a youth, he was an itinerant warrior. When the school split into the northern and southern, although the two leaders had lost the notion of self and others, the disciples stir up love and hate. The disciple of the northern school secretly set up Sun Siu as the sixth patriarch, fearing that the country would hear the transmission of the robe. They hired Xing Chang to assassinate the master, but the master had the power of knowing the thoughts of others, so he knew of this matter in advance, and set 10 ounces of gold on his chair. That night, Xing Chang entered his room, intending to kill him. The master just stretched out his neck. Xing Chang swung the blade 3 times, but could not harm him. So that was the sutra part. Then we will go through the commentaries. Okay, commentary. Neither Sun Siu nor the sixth patriarch had thought of self or others, but the disciple agitated, stirring up thoughts of love and hate in people, created the division. Then more specifically, Sun Siu's disciple did the agitating, denouncing the southern patriarch as illiterate and incompetent. The sixth patriarch's disciple really believes in him. You can't talk that way about our teacher, they said. He has obtained the wisdom without the aid of a master. So this is how the two sides debate. It never occurred to the sixth patriarch's disciple that they should kill Sun Siu. But Sun Siu's disciple were jealous and wanted to kill the six patriarchs. They knew that the rope and bat or bow were in the south. The rumor flew that Hui Ning would do anything, homicide or manslaughter. Why in the old days, he was a confident man, and now he's pretending to be a patriot. How absurd. Others said, he used to be a poor firewood gatherer in the mountain. What talent could he have? The people in the south have made him their leader, but it's only talk. They did everything they could to ruin him. At Huang Mei, everyone knew that he was a barbarian. He doesn't know anything at all. So Shen Xiu had several thousand men behind him, even though he did not have the rope and the bat. They each wanted to be the seventh patriarch, and without a father, how can there be a son? With Shen Xiu as the sixth patriarch, the seventh patriarch would surely be one of them. But they didn't dare make the news public because it was all too obvious that the position rightly belongs to Hui Ning. Then Tang Dynasty Buddhism was extremely complex. Xing Chang's family name had been Zhang. But after he left home, the master named him Qi Zi. As a boy, he robbed from the rich and gave to the poor, always fighting for the underdogs. His martial skills were outstanding, light and limber. He could leap 20 feet in the air in a single bound. They call him Flying Cat Zhang because he ran so fast and with such agility that he could break into your house without a sound, just like a cat. Not only could this cat walk silently, he could fly, but you wouldn't find him you wouldn't find his nickname in any of the history books. You would have been there. Having unsuccessfully tried to capture the master by burning off the mountain behind Nanhua Temple, Shen Xiu's men decided to hire an assassin to kill the master and stole the rope and bow. So that was the incident. The sixth patriarch could read mind, and so he was expecting his visitor. He put some gold on his chair and waited until midnight. When the sky was black, and Xing Chang came creeping up the steps, down the hall, and into his room. Was this a tense situation or not? What do you think the master did? He just stretched out his neck and although he didn't say anything, the thought, go ahead and swing your sword, come and kill me. This is calling sticking your neck out. Then Xing Chang was oblivious to the master. He was determined to carry out orders and had nothing on his mind but murder. I don't care if you are a bhikkhu, an arahat, or even a patriarch. I'm going to kill you, he said. swinging at the master's neck. He swung 3 times and nothing happened. Now just what do you think this means? So here again, we have to go into the sutta part. The master said, a straight saw is not bent. A bent saw is not straight. I merely owe you gold. I do not owe you my life. So Sing Tang fell to the ground in fright. After a while, he came to and begged for mercy, repenting of his error and vowing to leave home. The master gave him the gold and said, go, I fear that my follower will come to take revenge. Change your appearance and return another day, and I will accept you. So this was the instruction given. Then we go through the commentary. The master said, a straight sword is not bent. That is, the straight sword of the proper Dhamma cannot be harmed by deviant Dhamma. The deviant cannot defeat the right. The right always overcomes the deviant. You may have a sword, but you can't harm me with it. I merely owe you the gold which I borrowed in the past life, the master said. I don't own you my life because I never kill you. But it was all too much for Sing Tang, and he fainted. When he came to the master, talked with him for a long time. Why did you want to kill me? He said. It wasn't my idea, said Sing Tang. They told me that you are a... What is this word? Scoundrel. Means what? Means what? What does it mean? Oh, is it? No. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, it's scoundrel is like a dog, huh? Now, check the meaning, you see? A thief and a hunter, They say that you were nothing but a firewood gatherer who was pretending to be a patriarch. Hearing this, I felt it was my duty to kill you. But now I know that I was wrong. Why? If you have no virtue, my sharp sword would have sliced your head right off. Having met you, I realize that the affairs of the world are of no significant interest or of no great interest. Please let me leave home and bow to you as my teacher. The master said, here, take this gold and go quickly. My disciples are fond of me and they would kill you if they found out about this. Go somewhere else and leave home. When you return, I will teach and transform you. So this part, I think, is very interesting because the patriarch knew, this guy is not ready yet. So you need to wait for the appropriate causes and conditions. If I'm not wrong, later part of the sutta, this particular person came back and met the sixth patriarch who was at that time, I think, already established himself. Then he also became a monk. Then the sixth patriarch taught him, and he awakened. So that part was very interesting. Okay, turn to next page. 358. Okay. Scoundrel means dishonest and unscrupulous. Yeah, correct. Yeah, the next one, he used the word thief. So this one is the meaning. Means unscrupulous. Not honest. So this person, Sing Tang, who's supposed to kill the sixth patriarch, said, He was told that the sixth patriarch was a dishonest person, a thief, and a hunter, and also uneducated, firewood gatherer, or a wood cutter, who was pretending to be a patriarch. So that's why, because of that, he thought it was his duty to kill him. But now he said, I know that I was wrong. Why? If you had no virtue, my sharp sword would have sliced off your head. Because you remember, six patriarchs stick out the head for him to chop, but he couldn't harm him. So that part makes him realize that the six patriarch must have virtue. Okay, so the next part of the sutta, I think this part should be interesting. Xing Chang received his order and disappeared into the night. Later, he left home under another bhikkhu. That's how he got ordained. Received the complete precept and was vigorous in his practice. One day, remembering the master's word, he made the long journey to have an audience. The master said, I have thought of you for a long time. What took you so long? See, finally he met him. Then he replied, the High Master once favored me by pardoning my crime. Although I have left home and although I practice austerity, I shall never be able to repay his kindness. May I try to repay you by transmitting the Dhamma and taking living across. So this part is very interesting. He not only transmit the Dhamma, but he also helped to take living being across. Your disciple often study the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. So this Mahaparinibbana Sutta is about the Buddha's, Sakyamuni Buddha's Parinibbana. But he has not yet understood the principle of permanence and impermanence. I beg the High Master to be compassionate and explain them to me. The Master said, impermanent is just the Buddha nature, and permanent is just the mind's discriminating good and evil Dhamma. So this one is a very good explanation. So impermanent is just the Buddha nature. Means it's a universal characteristic. And permanent is just the mind's discrimination, means due to delusion and ignorance. You discriminate and you create good and bad or evil dhammas. High Master, your explanation contradicts the sutta text. Xing Chang replied. The Master said, I transmit the Buddha's mind seal. How could I dare to contradict the Buddha's sutta? Xing Chang replied, the Sutta said that the Buddha nature is permanent, and the High Master has just said that he is impermanent. It says that good and evil Dhamma, reaching even to the Bodhi mind, are impermanent, and the High Master just said that they are permanent. This contradiction is merely has intensify your students' doubt and delusion. So the student asked, right? The master said, formerly I heard Bhikkhuni Wu Qing Sang Wu Qing Zhang. Yeah, I know the Bhikkhuni. The name you pronounce as Zhang, not Sang. Okay, Wu Jing Zhang. Recite the Nirvana Sutta. When I commented on it, there was no one word or principle which did not accord with the sutta text. My explanation to you now is of no difference. Xing Chang replied, your student's capacity for understanding is superficial. Will the High Master please explain further? The Master said, don't you understand? If the Buddha nature were permanent, what use would there be in speaking of good and evil, Dhamma? To the end of an aeon, not one person would produce the Bodhi mind. Therefore, I explain it as impermanent. That is exactly what the Buddha explained as the meaning of true permanence. Yeah. So this part is very profound, not easy. But those who go by the word, they will say it's a contradiction. Because they think the Buddha's nature is permanent. They think it's eternal nature. But if you truly understand, if there is no discriminating mind, there is no duality, nothing. So permanent and impermanent come from the discriminating mind. So when you understand, your mind will not have this type of discrimination. Because the Buddha nature is just that nature. So like the sixth patria explained, don't you understand? If the Buddha nature were permanent, then what use would there be in speaking of good and evil Dhamma? To the end of an aeon, not a single person would produce the Bodhi mind. Therefore, I explain it as impermanent. So this is the patriarch's way of teaching. Otherwise, you cannot talk about it. You cannot even say anything about it. It does not benefit you. So if it's impermanent, then you know it is the after effect, understand or not? Like we went through earlier on, the Buddha nature doesn't move. It's already perfect, everything. And nothing is apart from the Buddha nature. So which means all conditioned things, all Dhamma, they are never apart from the Buddha nature. From there it arises. That's why all those conditioned Dhamma, they are impermanent. It arises from there. That's why he used this to teach. Otherwise there is no teaching. So for those who have the understanding, they will teach you differently. But your discriminating mind is very funny, because when you have a discriminating mind, means this mundane mind that discriminate, fen bie xing. So what happens is, the universal characteristic is impermanent, but through your delusion, what do you do? You think it's permanent, isn't it? True or not? You can see or not? Because the universal characteristic is impermanent. But when you experience life, when you go through life, you want them to be permanent, isn't it? So that's why your discriminating mind wanted it to be permanent. That's why he said, this is why you cling on to all these words. And then you get yourself distracted. And the delusion make you turn you into such a mind that doesn't understand the truth. So that's how Six Patriarch was able to reverse it and teach the teaching. So when you listen to him, then you will get the true understanding. But when you read the sutta, you just literally refer to the word, then you get very confused. But to you, is the Buddha's eternal nature is definitely permanent. But that one, you cannot use it. You cannot describe it. Where the eternal nature was never born, no word can describe it. So, if you say it's permanent, then there is no Dhamma. So it doesn't have any use for you. But if you understand all Dhamma come from there, then that particular understanding give rise to the Dhamma, the wisdom. That's why he said Buddha nature is impermanent in that sense. Then for the mundane mind, the discriminating mind, he also did the reverse. Because the human mind think differently. It's just like earlier on I shared with you all, whatever living being think is logical is always the opposite of the truth. The truth is always opposite of logic. Because logic comes from the mundane mind. The mundane mind is the discriminating mind. Okay? Then we move on to the commentary. We see what Xuanhua said in his commentary. The Buddha explained the Buddha nature as permanent to those attached to impermanence. And he explained it as impermanent to those who attach to permanence. So if you say that the Buddha nature is permanent, then what good and evil Dharma, what good and evil Dharma remain for discussion? Living beings would have all become Buddhas long ago. Why should one bother to speak the Dhamma to them in order to take them across? If the Buddha nature is permanent, everyone would be a Buddha, and there would be no need to cultivate. So the master said, you see that my explanation of the Buddha nature as impermanent is exactly what the Buddha meant when he spoke of permanence. So this is Xuanhua's way of explaining it to you. He has his understanding, he has his way. But the actual one is like just now that I share with you. Because no use. If I tell you that nature is eternal nature, permanent, never born, these are words, understand how? You cannot get anything in there. But if I say all Dhamma come from this nature, then different, understand how? Then you would like to know what are these Dhamma. And all these Dhamma that come from this nature are the conditioned Dhamma. That's why it's impermanent. That way you understand it clearer. Whereas this one, Xuanhua's way, appear more logical, understand? Because he said it's like the Buddha's skillful means. Skillful means he said, the Buddha explained the Buddha nature as permanent to those who attach to what? Because you attach to impermanent. Because especially the new practitioner, they haven't investigated into the conditioned Dhamma. And you ask them, is the body permanent? Straight away they reply, impermanent. Like the bhikkhu in the Anattalakkhana Sutta. Is feeling permanent? Impermanent. But they haven't investigated, anasana. So you have to use your skillful means to guide them out. Otherwise they get very confused. So he said, the Buddha explained the Buddha nature as permanent to those who attach to impermanent, because this is knowledge. This is not true realization. If you realize that all these conditioned Dhamma are impermanent, then he don't have to change it for you. But you believe what the book say, the text say, and what you have heard from people. So you attach to the concept of impermanent. Then he tell you the opposite. Then you have to go and reflect, contemplate, and cultivate. And I said, why did the Buddha say the Buddha nature is permanent? Because you attach to impermanent. So all this is how the Mahayana try to create the teaching in such a way so that it can appear like very very high level of teaching, esoteric teaching, so that they can expand on all this. But if you look at Theravada, it's very direct, very straightforward. No need to go into all this. So the Buddha, actually under the Theravada teaching, he explained very clearly. The conditioned world has the conditioned Dhamma. The unconditioned world has the unconditioned Dhamma. That's why when you understand this, you will penetrate. then the Mahayana way is more like skillful means and create more of this, like they call it the Zen story, yeah, for you to develop understanding. So what you need is the realization. When you realize, Dhamma can be established anytime. When you don't have the realization, then it's only words. So those that have the realization and connect to the true nature, they no need words. Then they can at the same time establish and don't establish. Because this mundane mind, they know, is condition arising, karmically conditioned for you to come to this world, to use it, to live life, to experience life, to cultivate and all those things. So this is not real. So able to differentiate between these two is very, very important. And they are not deceived by the form of mind anymore. That's the reason why the Buddha under the Theravada teaching, you remember this famous saying? He says, Sabbe Sankara what? Sabbe Sankara? All Sankara? What is this third one? Sabbe Sankara? Impermanent. Anicang. Then, Sabbe Sankara Dukkang. D-U. K-K-H-A. Then the last one is what? He used the word Dhamma already. He never say Sankara anymore. Anatta. So this word is very important. Here, Dhamma means both the condition and unconditioned Dhamma. So this part is very important. Whether it's the conditioned Dhamma or the unconditioned Dhamma is anatta, non-self, and empty. Non-self and empty. So this part makes the teaching very clear. It stand out. So within the conditioned world, Sankara, which is your mundane mind, discriminating mind, condition arising mind, the universal characteristic of impermanent is always there. Then within the conditioned world, it's also the same. All of Sankara, mental activity, the conditioned mind, lead to suffering, because when you deludedly attach and cling. But then when it comes to anatta, empty nature, non-self, it refers to the conditioned and the unconditioned. So within the unconditioned, which you call permanent, is also non-self and empty. Means this nature, your true nature, is not an entity that can come out and live life. You understand? Can you follow? Because the true nature, your true mind, is also not you. Because this one covers both. So with this, the Mahayana teaching can be understood straight away, because the Buddha is referring to the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma. So what they are trying to tell you is to use the skillful means in the Mahayana teaching. If people believe in impermanent, these two, then you tell them your Buddha nature is permanent. Understand? Then if they already penetrated anatta, then you have to tell them the other way around. Because there are people who attach to Dhamma. Attach to Dhamma means what? They haven't penetrated, but they cling on to what the sutta say, what their teachers say. So when it comes to the unconditioned. This one, they believe in the unconditioned, eternal nature of the Buddha. So when they believe that that one is permanent, then they will tell you the opposite, which is the skillful mean. But this teaching from the Theravada, which the Buddha taught to them, is very powerful. Once he teach this, sabbe dhamma anatta, then there is no more confusion. Because both the conditioned dhamma and the unconditioned dhamma is non-self and empty. Understand? So no need to argue about permanent and impermanent. Because within the unconditioned dhamma, because there is no condition, how can there be impermanent and suffering? True or not? That's why it's empty. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity. And this is the ultimate truth that need to be applied to the conditioned world. When you see this in the ultimate truth, your conditioned world, you cannot suffer anymore. Because there is no reality. All this impermanent suffering, they are only related to the mundane mind, understand? The form and mind. The form and mind experience impermanent. The form and mind experience suffering. But the true nature, the unconditioned, doesn't have any of all this. So this is what the Theravada teaching is all about. That's why I say, the moment you understand Theravada teaching, you will penetrate Mahayana teaching. It's no different. And this word, anatta, is actually very deep in its meaning and very profound. It's the same as your Mahayana concept of sunyata. So this one actually, in its true sense, it covers everything. It includes the deep meaning of sunyata. This is the word that Mahayana Sutta always use, sunyata. Whereas Theravada, they always use this word, anatta. And the problem with Theravada is they always associate this anatta as non-self only. This is where they go wrong. So what they miss out is anatta is also sunyata. So if anatta is only sunyata, where do I draw this arrow? This arrow has to come back. Okay, maybe I just draw across. This part is not really emphasized or elaborated on in the Theravada teaching. So this part is missing in the Theravada teaching. That's why they always say anatta means non-self, not me, not a permanent unchanging entity. But then, why did the Buddha say rupang anatta? Rupang doesn't mean only our physical body, non-self. He said this table is also rupang, external form. This building is also rupang. So when he say rupang anatta, does it mean this house is non-self? This table is non-self. No meaning in that. True or not? You can follow that. Because this cannot be non-self, is it? But this is anatta, no? Then what is the meaning of anatta if it's not non-self? Means it's condition arising, not real, impermanent. You attach clingly to suffering. And when condition cease to be, it cease to be. That's why ultimately not real. Empty nature. That's the reason why anatta is actually empty nature. Empty. Not what you think. Because condition arising thing depend on condition to arise. When condition cease to be, it cease to be. That's why within the condition world, this universal characteristics of impermanent will stand out. And because of anicchang, it will lead to all this. So by deduction, by deduction, because it is impermanent, is always not a permanent and changing entity. So by deduction, you can put the word here. By deduction. So here, non-self means not a permanent unchanging entity. So this part is very important. If it's not a permanent unchanging entity, that's why it's not a self, it's not you. And because it is not you, dependent on condition it arrives, when condition cease to be exist, that's why it's empty. So empty here means empty nature of existence. Empty nature of existence. Means ultimately no reality. Like we went through last time. We use the word the Mahayana Mandarin saying, when you are born into this world, you come empty, lai ye kong. Then when you leave, when you die, you also cannot bring along anything. It's like qi ye kong. So that kong, the meaning is very deep. When you come empty, because you cannot bring along anything. When you go, you also didn't bring along anything. But whatever karmic you do, they are recorded in the nature's law, law of karma. And that one you inherit. But that one is not physical, you cannot bring along. Okay. So hopefully with this is clear. Then we go to the next paragraph. The next part of the sutta. Furthermore, if all dhammas were impermanent, all things would have a self nature subject to birth and death, and the true permanent nature would not pervade all places. Therefore, I explain it as permanent. That is exactly what the Buddha explained as the meaning of true impermanent. So a lot of things, if you apply the logical mind, the discriminative mind, is like contradictory. But the truth is always the other way around. That's why here, if you were to go through the sutta, the six patriarch explain further. He said, furthermore, if all dhammas are impermanent, all things would have a self nature subject to birth and death. And the true permanent nature would not pervade all places. Therefore, I explain it as permanent. That is exactly what the Buddha explained as the meaning of true impermanence. So this one, you need to awaken to understand all this. Then the commentary, we see what Xuanhua had to say. Xuanhua said, basically, the Buddha nature is neither permanent or impermanent. See? This one comes from your discriminating mind, the duality. That is the ultimate principle of the middle way, means to transcend duality. Then why did the six patriarchs say it was impermanent? Why did he say that the mind which discriminate good and evil was permanent? He did it to cure Xing Chang of his attachment. See, when you attach to the sutta, the word, then you will get into problem. So this is to let him reflect and contemplate so that he can come out of the duality. He did it to cure Xingcheng of his attachment. Once you are rid of attachment, you do not need the Buddha Dhamma. The sixth patriarch took advantage of an opportunity to heal Xingcheng's delusion. But he wouldn't necessarily have explained it the same way to everyone. That's why I say everybody is different. But this particular person, Xingcheng, he need this type of approach to awaken him, because he is a cultivator who attached to words very strongly. Then when he has this doubt, he cannot break free. Your doubt is a mental hindrance. Then the next part of the sutta. It was for the sake of common people and those who belong to other religion who cling to deviant views of permanent, and for all those who follow the two-vehicle way, mistaking permanence for impermanence, formulating the eight perverted view that the Buddha in the ultimate Nirvana Sutta or teaching destroyed their prejudiced view. He explained true permanence, true bliss, true selfhood, and true purity. Okay, then we go to the commentaries. Common people and non-Buddhists cling to false permanent. He even talked about the sound hearer and the Pachika Buddha, Savaka'a, sound hearer, sainthood way. Pachika Buddha are also part of the cultivator who has gone beyond the sainthood way. Pachika, they call it the Pachika Buddhas, means some use the word silent Buddha. Silent Buddha to mean that they don't have a Buddha Sasana, not like a Sama Sambuddha. Sama Sambuddha has a Buddha Sasana, a dispensation. But this particular Buddha, that's why they call him the silent Buddha. Not to say he cannot teach, you know. A lot of people in the Theravada tradition, they have been told, particular Buddha is a silent Buddha, he cannot teach. That's why he remains silent. No, silent there means there is no sasana. He can teach. Even the sainthood way, first stage, second stage, third stage, and arahant, they can teach. But limited by their understanding, their limited understanding. So this part is in Shenhua's commentary, is it common people and non-Buddhists clinging to false permanent. And he includes all these Savaka, sound hearer, Pachika Buddha, who mistaken permanence for impermanent. Then these two groups each have four perverted views, making eight in all. So these two groups, each having four perverted views, so that's why there's eight. So here is the Mahayana way of maybe breaking up the four types of perverted view. So we see what they say. Common people and non-Buddhists turn the four marks of condition existing upside down and say, the suffering of condition existence is bliss. When you are deluded, what happens? You think this world that we live in, the conditioned world, is very beautiful, very mean. You can own things, you can have things, you can have possession, you can have money, you can have fun. So that's the reason why they attach to existence as very, very beautiful or very blissful. But the actual reality is towards the end. The end result is suffering when you attach, because of the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature. But when you fail to see it, the first perverted view is the suffering of conditioned existence has been misinterpreted as blissful. Then the second one is impermanent as permanent because you think you can own things, you can have things, you think you exist. You think there's a permanent unchanging entity that can own things and have things. Mm. Then it's impurity as pihon, like this body of ours. It's a skin bag, or what they call chou pi nang, of a lot of parts which are not really what you think. Because when you look beneath the skin, you got all the dirty things inside there, your feces, your whatever, mucus, pus, and even all the ugly part, the skeleton and all those things. But superficially, when you look at the skin, the complexion, then you are deceived by it. You think it's pure, it's so beautiful, it's so radiant, it's so young. Then self as non-self. So this one is the non-enlightened being. But even for the sainthood, the Savaka, the sound hearer, and the Pacheka Buddha, the four virtues, they also have a what they call, they have some form of misunderstanding too. This one, number five, very funny, that the Mahayana say, the bliss of Nirvana, they think is suffering. Because what I felt is, the teaching has become like, no one to be enlightened, understand? Then you don't want to cultivate. You realize that? That's why they want to have that self. If I cultivate, I am enlightened, understand? So this type of view can stay there. So no one to be enlightened, then cultivate for what? No one to cultivate, no one to meditate. They find it very contradictory, you know. So to them, they have to severe that type of wrong view is not easy. Even the first stage of sainthood, they will know that this form of mind is not them. But then, they can never believe this, the suffering, the bliss of Nirvana, they believe it's suffering because it's like annihilation. You know what is this word? Annihilation. There are a lot of wrong view during the Buddha's time. Annihilation. Is it correct spelling? Means they say after you die, you cease to be, no more already. So they believe in this annihilation. That's why they say, after you experience or realize Nibbana, you cease to be, and that's how everything annihilated. This is a wrong view, understand? In the first place, that form and mind that come, this form and mind, the physical body is physical form plus mind or consciousness. These two, which is the five aggregate, human being or five aggregates, in the first place, this is not you. If this is also not you, then this one that meditate and become enlightened, how can you say there is somebody who become enlightened? No, it's the form and mind. This form and mind is conditioned arising, impermanent. This one, when it has the wisdom connected to it, you can say it's enlightened, but it's not you. That's why this understanding is very important. So what I believe the Mahayana mentioned here, number five, is the bliss of Nirvana, they think is suffering, because they don't like this type of concept of annihilation. Like nobody inside there, nobody to be enlightened. So a lot of people become very confused. As I in the early day area where I came out and shared, I say, finally, no one born, no one died. Then, no one to be enlightened. So they look at me, they like very confused. Then, meditate for what? If nobody enlightened. So that self-concept is very important to them. And they cling to that because they believe you strive, you finally realize enlightenment. And there's a lot of logic behind that thinking. So here, even when you are at the sainthood stage, you may still have this type of what they call belief system. Then number six, it's permanent, it's impermanent. So this type of wrong view, which is the Mahayana, the Zen or Mahayana ways of classification, means its purity is impure, means the opposite. Then itself is non-self. So all these are the perverted views, which the supreme vehicle will not fall into it. If you go the supreme vehicle, the Bodhisattva way, they will not fall for all this. They know these are all within the conditioned world. Come about to duality. So the non-Buddhists, chances of them becoming even sainthood are very, very rare. So for them, they have the normal delusion. They think our conditioned world, which is ultimately lead to suffering. That's why the word, any pleasurable sensation is a prelude to suffering. But a lot of people attach to our existential world because they believe this is beautiful. This world can give you a lot of things. This conditioned world is a world of bliss. You can have all the good things. So when you attach, the ultimate outcome is suffering, because craving will lead to suffering. When you cannot get what you want, when your expectations are not met, then you cannot see that all these are impermanent. So you think all your possessions are real, your loved one, your property, your wealth. So you cling on to them, you hold on to them, that's how you suffer. Then everything that is impure, you think is very, very beautiful, very pure, you can have it, own it, and develop all the attachment, craving to it. Then the human form and mind, fire, non-self, you treat it as self. So these are for people who are completely without the Dhamma. So they will end up going through birth and death, samsara. But even for those who have gone through sainthood and Pachaka Buddha, if they don't take the supreme vehicle way, or the Bodhisattva way, they will still, when they come as a form of mind, they will still think the opposite. Even though they have cleared the other four earlier on perverted view or delusion, but they still have this type of what they call perverted view at a more refined level. Unless you take the supreme vehicle, you cannot go against, you cannot understand all this. You cannot transcend all this. So to transcend all this, you have to go beyond the sainthood way. Yeah. Maybe at the Arahant level, no more ignorant. Yeah. No more ignorant. Yeah. But then, the Arahant, that still have the five aggregate with them, and they are still existing, they have still got outflow of thought. There is no more outflow of the segmented form and mind. Means upon that, the last thought moment, that condition, rebirth, the last thought moment, that condition, rebirth, consciousness, that one will not happen because there is no more avijja. So at the moment of death, the mind ceases. There is no ignorance. That's why you cannot condition rebirth consciousness. Then there is no more what they call condition for the rebirth consciousness to come about. So rebirth consciousness can come about in two ways. The normal human being subject to karma, you need avijja, so ignorant. Avijja is ignorant. Ignorant will condition rebirth consciousness. So that one is for normal human being, means they have to come. They got no choice. The other one for bodhisattva, they can choose to come. That one don't need avijja. Because of their vow, their great love and compassion, to their four basic vow of bodhisattva, they will arise this type of pure thought, love and compassion. Then you will use that pure thought to go into the the physical form. So that pure thought together with the physical form also become the five aggregate of form and mind for rebirth. But that type of rebirth is without ignorance, without avijja. That's why it can still come back. So unless you take the supreme vehicle away, you cannot understand the subtle delusion that is associated with this type of higher teaching. Then the next one is, same, I have gone through 5, 6, 7, 8. It's the opposite of the above 4. Okay, then we go to the next section of the sutta. Almost 4:30. I try to finish off this part. You now contradict this meaning by relying on the words. That's why I say that what? Ji what? What is his name? Ji Chang. Is it Chang? The monk's name. Sing Chang. Sing Chang, isn't it? He said, you now contradict this meaning by relying on the words. Taking annihilation to be impermanent and fixing on a lifeless permanent. Again, the word annihilation. In this way, you misinterpret the last subtle, complete, and wonderful words of the Buddha. Even if you read it 1,000 times, what benefit could you derive from it? That's why this Sing Chang, he attached to the Dhamma, the words. So Sing Chang suddenly achieved the great enlightenment and spoke this verse. So just by telling him what went wrong, he turned and transformed. And he realized great enlightenment. Then after that, his understanding completely different. That's why he can come out with this beautiful stanza. To those who hold impermanence in mind, the Buddha speaks the permanent nature. So now he follow the Mahayana tradition. Then not knowing expedient way is like picking up pebbles from a spring pond. But now, without and effort. That's why the moment you understand, you no need to cultivate, no effort involved. The Buddha nature manifests. The master did not transmit it, and I did not obtain a thing. So this is beautiful, because his nature now realizes it. That's why he said, the master did not transmit, and I did not obtain a thing. Because it's a realization. Then the master said, now that you understand, you should be called zi zi zi. What is the Mandarin word meaning? Oh, breath of understanding. Zi. Zi is breathing. Yeah lah, breath lah, is it? Then you put here the English translation. Oh, the width of understanding, okay. So these two words, the meaning is he understands deeply. Very, very thoroughly. So, 记者, thank the master, bow and withdraw. See, luckily he came back and he asked. That's why when you have the condition, you should ask. Then who knows? You may be ready and you will awaken. That's why don't allow the mundane mind to create the conditioning in you. This mundane mind always tell you this one. Paisei, you know what paisei or not in Hokkien? You are ashamed to ask. And who is paisei? The thought is paisei. It's not you. And the thought always tell you, hey, what if I ask? Then Brother Teo say, this is a very stupid question. I feel very stupid. Then people laugh at me. That's why you have fear. You dare not ask. But what is all this? This is all the mundane mind telling you. It's not the true mind. The true mind don't have all this. Because when you have this mundane mind, means your ego is there, understand not? The ego is who? You think you. And you paise. You fear. You scared people laugh at you. Everything, the atta, is still there. So when you still hold on to all those things, you cannot break free. That's why I used to tell a lot of Kayanamita, forget about the thought. It's always the thought. Especially if you attach to convention, or you attach to rites and ritual. You say, this is very rude. That is very rude. You cannot do things like that. This is all your thought telling you. These are conventional reality. These are not ultimate truth. Different culture do it differently. But when you are at people's place, you have to try to understand their culture. Then when you understand their culture, you try to create, try to avoid misunderstanding. That one is very good. But if this is not a commonly accepted culture in that particular place or what, then you don't try to apply the same type of culture and create unnecessary problem. And keep on telling people off. You're not supposed to do this. Like one of the Kayanamita. He go and tell a new Kayanamita who came not long. Because this lady was 70 years old that time, I think. The leg was not so good. So he cannot cross. She cannot cross her leg. So what happened was she tried to sit on a bench. Then I think her leg also need rest. Then she want to sit on the floor and stretch his leg out on the side. So he was sitting at the back, the leg pointing at me and the Buddha. He straight away reprimanded that old lady. How can you be so rude? Cannot point your leg at the Buddha and the teacher. Until she panicked. She got no mood to meditate that day. Then after the meditation over, after I ring the bell, straight away she put out her hand on the 70 years old lady. I said, Pratyu, I got a question to ask you. Somebody told me, it's very rude to point the leg at the Buddha and you. What have you got to say? Oh, he asked me this type of question. Then I had to explain to her. I say, if you attach to superstition and the convention that people believe in, then of course it sounds very logical, isn't it? Pointing your foot at somebody is what? No manners, isn't it? Very rude, isn't it? Especially you point at the Buddha. No? Then I asked her, I said, if that is true, our modern society got condominium, isn't it? Your Buddha down there, they stand above it, how? Understand? No? Every day you sleep, you think that orientation, no Buddha in front of you. Understand? The world is round. Understand? You may be pointing at the what they call in China, they got what? The big Buddha that like walking on the mountain one. Ling San Ta Po. Then you also very rude. It's not like that. It's not rude or not rude depends on your heart, your understanding. You don't mean it. There is just an image for you to recall to mind the great quality and wisdom of the Buddha. That is not the Buddha. But if you purposely do it with intent, then of course that is coming. But if you don't have that because of your bodily condition, you need to stretch, why not? I say nothing wrong. That's why it's about your heart. Forget about all those things. Then you will not get yourself into trouble. Then I have to explain. I say more important is your sincerity. That's why the Buddha said, any posture that can make you comfortable, you can meditate with it. Then if you can maintain awareness of your four posture, then all your activity connecting the four posture, that is sati sampajana, means daily mindfulness. Mindfulness and clear comprehension. And then only she starts to understand and calm down. That's why I don't simply say things where you can't understand. Then you think it's logical because you heard from people. But you never investigate, you never contemplate, reflect and find out. So this is what thought is all about. When thought come up with idea, concept, views and opinion, belief system, right and ritual, it will create all this problem. Okay, we read the commentary, then we see what Xuanhua has to say. Unless you understand that the Buddha's Dhamma are expedient devices, you might as well collect rocks from the bottom of the pool. You are useless. Hearing the Master's instruction, Sing Chang, return to the source, means the true nature, and went back home. Suddenly enlightened, he understood his mind and saw his true nature, the true mind. That's why the true mind is very important. But his enlightenment was not given to him by the six patriarchs, and his attainment was actually no attainment. He simply opened up to his own inherent wisdom. Means the mundane mind realizes itself and sees. That's why the true mind, the true nature shine forth. So the master gave him the certification by saying, now that you are truly enlightened, I will give you the name. Understand very deeply or very thoroughly. Okay, that's good. At least we finish one chapter. Now you can have your meditation. I will give you half an hour to meditate. You can off the light, then you can have your meditation. Okay. For those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then we will open up for reporting of meditation, followed by any question that you may have, Q&A. Okay. The mic is here, where Sister Lee. You just have to put up your hand, or raise your hand, then we pass you the mic. Anybody who wants to report meditation or ask any question, you can have the mic. Yeah, pass to Mindy. Mindy.
I would like to ask one experience during my sitting meditation.
Yes.
It was in a state, it's like at the very bottom. I don't know what state is, very at the bottom. And then I felt the nature of desire or wanting.
Oh, okay.
It's like a stand-alone nature is bred within, and I would like to know how to understand this desire in understanding of the Dhamma.
How do you start your meditation?
It's just a normal meditation.
Yeah. You describe how long when you went in and what you do.
It was actually sitting meditation, and then okay. I felt tired, then I just lie down.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I think I do Anapanasati.
Okay.
Just slowly. And it was in a state very calm. And then it's like at the very bottom. The desire nature is at the very bottom.
What is that? So-called you describe as the desire nature, you have to describe that. What does it mean? Means it's a kind of craving or what?
Yeah, it's like a craving, a wanting nature.
What is it? What is it? Is it something that the thought create or?
It's not a thought, it's like the nature of wanting something.
Yeah, you have to be very clear. The form and mind, has this consciousness that is already there. So you say you were meditating in the sitting posture, then you decided to lie down. Then you did Anapanasati, then your breathing should slow down. Did your breathing slow down? Yeah, then it become more quiet, more peaceful. Then you're supposed to be aware. Then this so-called deep, I don't know what you mean by deep. Deep means you are able to, there are many ways of interpreting, because I scared you interpret it wrongly. Deep means when you are really silent and just aware, the awareness went deep into the conscious and the unconscious mind, then it's able to be aware of that mundane mind that is giving you this type of, like you mentioned, it's a type of craving. But you must be able to use your own words to describe it. How do you feel? And is it drawing you away? Or is your consciousness just aware? If it's aware, no more story to tell.
Just aware.
And then there is no more story of craving and all those things. Because if it's just aware, it will cease to be. So meditation is two parts. First, to train the mind. If you already trained, like what you described, then you can go into the quietness, the silence, the stillness. But before you reach the stillness, the mind activity is still there. So you have to be careful. That's why I say you have to be very clear whether it's just an awareness. If it's just an awareness, you don't do anything. Whatever that you come to be aware of, it will slow down and cease to be and disappear. But because you want to know.
Just
that one thing to know is a thought, then you become curious. Understand? So all this can happen. So you have to be very clear in your meditation so that when you come out of it, you can describe it. Because more important is not about the experience. Always remember, it is not about the experience. Experience can be any. Sometimes it can be good meditation or bad meditation. This experience is just a conditioned state. Do you understand? Conditioned state means the mind, because of certain condition, this thing will happen. So meditation is to understand why this thing happened. There is a condition arising mind state. The activity come from the mundane mind. If the mundane mind don't have understanding, don't have wisdom, and it still has this mental hindrance, then it will create condition for certain things to happen. But if your mundane mind has been trained, it has been trained in such a way that you can go into the calmness, the peacefulness, and the quietness until it's so quiet, then you realize the true mind or the silent mind. Then you just silent and don't do anything. Stabilize it. That is the first thing you have to do. Then when it's stabilized, it will be aware. It can be aware of many, many things. And then through the awareness, you can develop the awakening, the understanding, and the wisdom. That is what you're supposed to do. So don't be curious about the experience. The experience got no meaning. Understand? First, you ask yourself. You have to be very clear about what is it you are doing in the name of meditation. Am I there to train my mind? Or is my mind already trained? If the mind is already trained, then you go for what I explained just now. You just let it be. It will go back to its original state of stillness and silence. It will just be aware, become more and more quiet. Then the anapanasati also become very subtle. Until you don't need the anapanasati to anchor your breath, to anchor your mind, to stay peaceful or aware. So this is the silent mind, paucity. So that paucity need to be stabilized so that it is independent on its own. It can be quiet, it can be still and silent on its own. It no need to dwell anywhere. It no need to anchor to any object of meditation. So once you have that stability, then use it to understand things. That awareness is very powerful, where there is your true mind. And that true mind can understand a lot of things, but that awareness and the thought, they are very near. And you cannot differentiate because you are not familiar. So most of the time it's the mind that is trying to come out and tell you things. The mind that is trying to meditate, trying to look for things. That one needs to be silent. If that one is active, your mind cannot be trained. The true mind cannot manifest. So more important is, have you stabilized your true mind? First, you have already trained. Means you know how to silence your mind, make it quiet through anapanasati or any skillful means. Then have you trained until it's so stable, until you don't need the object of meditation, then you are aware most of the time. So this mind is aware. Wherever you locate the mind, it will stay there. That's why the trained mind listens to you. You want it to be silent, it's just silent, aware. So initially you can anchor it to your object of meditation, like your breathing. So this breathing, once you become very skillful, it will slow down until like the subtle breathing, like hardly any more breathing. So if you continue to stabilize that, then this mind enters sati. When the mind enters sati, means it's already mindful on its own. Technically, you don't need an object of meditation. Then wherever you locate this mind is very sensitive. It can be aware. It can know a lot of things. It can detect the vibration, the heartbeat. That's why after that, if the breath can go down to the heart, stay at the heart. Just silence everything and feel. And locate whatever you can locate around your heart area. So that true mind, when it arrives, it can detect the gateway. Then just silence everything and let it do. The fourth support, trust. Initially it's relaxed, aware. After you relax, you maintain awareness. Then the maintenance of it is 24 hours. Then after that, don't use the thought, don't use the mind. Just allow the nature to do. Just let it do what it wants to do, like a dead body. Let the awareness run. Whatever you want to be aware, let it be. And if your mind can follow the awareness, means the awareness and the movement as one. Because you must differentiate between the two. The form and mind got this heartbeat, the pulse of life. Okay? So when you completely silent, you don't do anything, you can be aware of this. Well, this is the consciousness trying to arise. Every time it arises, it's the heartbeat. Then from there, it can actually be used to arise thought, to arise contact at any of the sense door. So we call it the five physical senses. Your seeing, consciousness, your hearing, smell, taste, tactile. Then finally, your thought consciousness. So these six doors, they can arise anytime, any of the six sense bases. Then upon contact, what happens? If you are aware, you will know. You can be at the moment, you can stay with it. So this is how meditation can take off and allow you to develop the wisdom and the understanding. So this part, you have to ask yourself, am I doing all this? The others are what you experience inside the meditation is not important. But if that experience doesn't bring about understanding or wisdom or awakening, then it's just a conditioned state. You may experience peace, calmness, the whatever thing that you describe. But all these are not important. Understand? All these are normal phenomena that arise. So this normal phenomena, when it arises, if you cannot insight into it and give rise to understanding, then you didn't really learn anything. Your mind may be more calm, more peaceful, which is much better than the heedless thinking mind. That's why meditation is to train your mind not to be heedless. So that it's more peaceful, more calm, more aware, and it can understand things. That is the purpose of meditation. Then when it already trained, this mind become very different. Throughout the day, it will listen to you. It will be aware. It will be mindful. It will be peaceful. There will be clarity. So that is the ultimate, what they call understanding that you need to develop. I don't know what you are trying to ask me, because all those questions, they still come from your thought, understand? So what is important is you have to tell me, are you clear of what you are doing when you are in that meditation?
Yes.
Clear means, are you there to train your mind or to stabilize your mind? And have you really stabilized your mind? These three questions. Like you say, okay, you are clear. Clear of what? What are you doing when you decide to lie down, do the anapanasati? What are you doing actually at that time?
Actually, the phenomena just comes.
You know, your intent. Because you say you know what you are doing. Means when you do all those things, what is your understanding of what are you doing? Are you training your mind or are you trying to experience something?
No, the that experience, I understand that it's a phenomena, it's arise and falls, and I know that it's a standalone, it has a correct screen.
That one I am not interested. What I'm asking you is, your purpose and intent, do you understand what are you doing when you go into that meditation? What is your purpose and intent? Are you training your mind, or are you just do what you have been doing and wanting to experience things? These two are very different, you understand? Means your purpose and intent, when you do the so-called meditation, What is it you are doing in the name of meditation? It means you say, I am meditating. What do you mean by that? Because the Buddha's meaning is very, very clear. The Buddha says, strive on with heedfulness. Means you have to develop heedfulness. And you have to seriously strive on. Means with diligence, with virya, develop it. He didn't say strive on to become enlightened. No, just to train your mind to be heedful. To be heedful got two parts. First, to be ever mindful. So to be ever mindful, you might at least train this mundane mind that think a lot, that runs, wanders off and like heedlessly thinking. You have to train this mind. This mind that has this habitual tendency and all this mental hindrance that make you heedless, think a lot, wanders off very fast. You cannot be with the moment, you cannot be aware. So what you need to do is to use some skillful means. To train this mind or to develop the spiritual faculty so that the mental hindrance is no more there, then your spiritual faculty take over and you will become mindful, aware, then the samadhi comes, then you become peaceful. So that is the first thing you have to do. Develop mindfulness first. When the mind is already mindful, not wandering off, not heedless, you have to stabilize it to become ever mindful. So make sure you have done this, otherwise meditation cannot start. You are wasting your time. Because these are all thought-based meditation that people repeat and repeat without knowing what they are doing. So after you have done that, after that thing has stabilized, then that object of meditation that you are using to anchor the mind, to make it peaceful and to stabilize it, you will reach a point where all this become very quiet, very subtle, until no more movement. Means the mind enters stillness or opacity, completely silent, without any movement, still. That is what the tranquility of mind is all about, the silent mind is all. So not until you hit this point, your real meditation cannot start. So always ask yourself, have I trained my mind? Am I aware? If I'm already aware, can I leave this mind? Don't need anything to anchor it. Can it stay peaceful? Can it stay aware? If it can, then it can meditate. Otherwise, it still cannot meditate. It is still a conditioned state. Mindful, aware, peaceful. Then you try to know things. That one not much use. But if you can be aware and continuously let it be, and it become very quiet, very still, until no movement, means ever mindful, that is the meditative mind. Then during the sitting, a lot of things can happen. You will start to understand how you function as a human being. You will start to see your subtle greed or whatever. So all these essential Dhamma, you will see them. Even the enlightenment factor, everything, you will start to experience them. But when I say see them, it's not with the eye, no, with your mindfulness, your awareness. Your awareness is aware of all this enlightenment factor arising. Or if it's the mental hindrance, you also aware. Understand? Then the four foundation of mindfulness can come in. Like the Buddha said, it's the essential desire of you will. You must be aware. Aware means you know this mind state has arisen. Means your true mind has already been stirred and conditioned into like and dislike, pleasant, unpleasant. So the moment you see it, you will have to understand that this is no longer meditation. Because sensual desire and ill will are mental hindrance that will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful and aware. So what must you do? You need to see all this and understand that these are mental hindrance, so you don't react to sense experience. Whatever happens, just let it be. The sensation that arise, it can be pain, itchiness, numbness or what. You just let it be. The moment you don't label it, there is no sensual desire or ill will. The moment you don't attach, don't cling, you just allow it to be, then continue to be mindful and just aware. Whatever mind state that your mind stir will dissipate and come back to the stillness. So these are the exercises that you need to do, the initial training, so that whatever sense experience that come, the mind go back to its original state, peacefulness, aware. doesn't get interested in all those things. But the moment you get interested, you are lost in thought. You are drawn. Then the wisdom cannot arrive. That one becomes knowledge already. Yeah. So what you go through is I try to let you understand that you avoid that old way of habitual tendency to always want to know what is happening, and equate that experience like you have already progressed. So there is a lack of clear understanding if you do that. Because when you understand, first thing you ask, is my mind trained? Are my spiritual faculties stabilized? If it's stabilized, my mind will be in the meditative state. No more mental hindrance. If you are not having it, means it's not stable yet. The spiritual faculty not stable, then your training of the mind also not stable. And then continue to train. Relax, silent, and just away. Train. Train until this mind listen to you. This mind can do what you want it to do. You want it to be silent, it will be silent. You want it to be aware, it will just be aware. You want it to meditate, it will meditate. Means this mind has become trained. It listens to you. Then the old way, the habitual tendency, the stirring, the reaction, or it will slowly, slowly like get itself deconditioned. But your new way of living is a heedful way of living. Most of the time you are aware, mindful. Then your mind doesn't stir. But the problem with cultivator is the moment you are out of the retreat or out of the formal meditation, you go back to daily life, your old way of heedless living come back again. Where you can only do one thing at a time. And if you are heedless, creating thought, lost in thought, you can never be mindful. So this inability to be mindful in the midst of life is the one that is causing meditator not to have the ability to progress and to become heedful in the midst of life. So what the Buddha teaches, after you are trained, you determine to continue this heedful living in the daily life. First thing you have to do is, the Buddha said, after this, after anapanasati, or after you have trained your mind, the mindfulness, you have to develop mindfulness of the four postures. That is daily mindfulness. Then mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement. Just do that until it's very stable. The moment it's very stable, every time you sit, straight away your mind settle down. No need anapanasati, nothing. It's just still by itself, silent. Or even if there is a bit of this, what they call thinking going on, it will slow down on its own. The moment you're silent and let it be, where you know how to let things be, then this movement, because it's energy-based, habitual tendency, it will slow down on itself. Then you will realize that true mind coming back to you very fast. That is what meditative training is all about. You cannot do that means you are not skillful. Then after you can do that, then you realize your meditation has really progressed. But there is hardly any thought. Then in the midst of life, you are most of the time aware, mindful, heedful. So that is more useful. Instead of sitting trying to experience something, that one, it doesn't really bring forth the real, what I should say, the wisdom. That one is mostly knowledge-based. And then people can tell you a lot of things. So what is important is this understanding, get it understood, then your meditation will take off, you will progress. Okay? Now you can continue.
What I would like to understand, it's still my mind, my thought is asking the question. For example, the eye consciousness, when we see an object, our eye consciousness is in contact with the object.
Your mind, when you allow the mind to go to that sense door, then that sense door consciousness will arise, understand? If your mind doesn't go there, it will not arise. Like at night when you sleep. When you sleep, your consciousness is actually at your heart area, the pulse of life, the heartbeat, they will arise. But because you are sleeping, you are resting, so your hearing consciousness, although it's still like normal, but because you are not conscious, it's like not active. Not active means the hearing consciousness cannot arise unless it imprints on your ear, understand? Very strong. So in the Abhidhamma is called the registering. The Bhavanga, which is the life continuum, means when you are asleep or when you are in the state of rest, this Bhavanga, the mind moment, they were like a stream, they will flow. Then when the sense door consciousness, there is an impringement. Understand? Impringement means like something hit your eardrum, the vibration. Then it vibrates, understand? Then this consciousness registers it. Then when it registers it, it makes you conscious. Then when it makes you conscious, means your mind has gone there because that vibration caused you to register what the vibration is, then your brain perceives. Then you input the content, means perception and all that. Then if it's something your brain not familiar, that is fear, understand? If it's something that brain is familiar, then it will know, it will be attentive. What is this? Then you will try to recollect. Then you will try to listen. Yeah. So that consciousness will arise when your mind is there. So everywhere you locate your mind, it will trigger off the consciousness. But if you are in the daily life, your seeing is very active. Your hearing is very active. Then your thought is also very active. But when you sleep, all these mind door, they actually slow down where your brain is resting. But you cannot rest because your brain store up a lot of memory. And a lot of this memory that you store are unfinished business or problem of life. You still hold on to it, you still have your worry, your anxiety, and somehow your phobia, your scars of memory. So all these need to find order. So when you sleep or rest, it will come out as thought. That's why thought is respond to all this attachment of memory. So when they come out, it's like in wave. They release it out. Then when you are sleeping, you are like not really conscious, but there is a subconscious mind that is aware of all this subconscious release. That's why sometimes you like see them like dream state like that. Then they come out like your thought, but in image form. Then sometimes you can create dreams and all these things. So when you are in your daily life, you are in a conscious state, you experience different things. When you sleep, you are in the subconscious and the unconscious, you experience different things. But if you have mindfulness, you can be aware of all these movements. It's just like when you are in your conscious moment, when you are wide awake in your daily life, the awareness can be aware of all these movements. Very clear, one by one, you can see them. Because it has to arise. You have the senses, it will continue to arise. But when you are trained, when you have the right view and the wisdom, your mind don't react to it anymore. Your mind don't stir anymore. Even if it stir, it's that moment aware, perceive, you don't continue to create story. Understand? You will not stir anymore. You will not proliferate your thought. You just aware, then move on. Aware, move on. And then you need to reflect on something. You silence yourself, reflect. Yeah. But before you have this trained mind, this mind just think. Keep on thinking. Understand? Whatever sense door take over, you think. Sense door take over, you just think. So the real meditation should be to have the mindfulness to understand what is going on. And who are you, what are you, means what make you the way you are? How come you react to sense experience? How come you have this fear, dislike, unhappiness? How come you have this craving, desire? It's to see them. What make you like that? And when you see, then you realize it comes from one of the sense door. And the content of consciousness that you input is always your views and your opinion and your conditioning. That's how like and dislike come about. Well, these are your views and opinion, your conditioning. You are conditioned into reacting this way. You have been doing this for so long. So these are habitual tendencies that you must see them so that you understand. Then when you understand, you tell yourself, okay, the next time when I see the same thing, hear the same thing, smell the same thing, maybe tactile feel the same thing, or the memory recall the same thing, how should I have the right view not to react the same way, which lead to heedless thinking? This is how you straighten your view. Then you learn to see things as they are, like the Buddha said. Then you become different. Then as you have this understanding, you will realize whatever stirring of the mind, like you used to get angry when you hear something or see something, the next time it arrives, because you are aware, that thing cannot actually arise. Even it arises, at that moment, immediately the awareness, no, this is wrong, this is evil root, this is reacting. Then from there, you will cease, then no more. Then you can accept him for what he is, you will move on, understand? Then you no longer like before, wow, the memory keep on coming back. What is this fellow up to? Why is he appearing here again? Why is he coming back to haunt me? So all these are your thoughts telling you. That's why the lack of peace comes from your delusion, self-delusion. You are caught in that delusion, that condition you into what you are. Your fear, your phobia, your like and dislike, your whatever mental state that arises, your whatever views and opinion, you realize they are all conditioned so strong that if you don't reverse all this, you are straightening your view, you will behave the same. That's why you will continue to be heedless. You will continue to react to the sense experience the same old way. Means your character, your personality never change. You can only change when you understand that all these are wrong, lead to wrong thought, condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. And then when you see this, you wake up. My life, I'm not going to allow my own form of mind to end up this way. If I choose to be happy, peaceful, mindful, heedful, I will be peaceful, mindful and heedful. Then I determine to train. Then I determine to straighten my view. Then I determine every time I see something, hear something, smell, I will act differently. This is how you can transform. And this is how wisdom and understanding can transform you as a person, as a human being. So all those questions that you ask, not important at the moment, understand or not? No need to know those things. Develop your mindfulness. When you have that, when you know your mind already very stable, well-trained, the awareness, and then use it to develop understanding of how you become what you are, understand or not? How Mindy, the old Mindy and the new Mindy is different. Well, when you are mindful and heedful and you know what went wrong, you will change for the better. And when you change for the better, you have wisdom, understanding, right view, you keep on straightening your view, you keep on having less of this mental reaction, thinking and all those things. That's how your mind starts to quiet down. Every moment of sense experience is just peaceful, peaceful, aware. Peaceful. A lot of the thinking are not required. They are just the way they are. Stop. Understand? No need to, like last time, wow, worry, project your thought, then chattering inside. Understand? How can I deal with this fellow? Next time I see him, I'm going to tell him all. All this, your heedless thinking. And this one will not bring about peace. But this is your very strong self-delusion, the atta. You think you and that person is different. But when you understand it's form and mind, form and mind. He is the way he is. But that form and mind with delusion will behave like that, will act like that. That's the reason why I say, finally you must have that right view to tell yourself, the deluded person will do deluded thing. Understand? It's not him, it's the delusion. Angry people do angry thing. The evil root of anger is inside him. That's why he is just the way he is. And then you can be at peace. Your mind is not like before already. So these are the right view that you need to develop and experience it in real life. So that in future, whenever you see something, hear something, smell, tactile, feel or taste or think, your mind is at peace. And that is real progress. That is real understanding. If your mind cannot be at peace, it means sankhara a lot. Thinking still very active. Then very difficult to develop the understanding. As long as sankhara is there, you will attack. You will cling. The wrong view are there, the evil roots are there. Where you haven't rooted it out. To root it out means you must see their empty nature. Their impermanent characteristic. Then how when you attach and want things your way, it leads to suffering. It always leads to suffering. That's why you cannot have desire, attachment. The Mahayana got a very good saying. Actually, he said, each and every one of you, you are actually Buddha. Understand? Like just now in the Sutta. If Buddha nature is permanent, if you are that, then you no need to meditate already, isn't it? Understand? But because you cannot realize that, that's why you have problem. So he said the cause of this is 妄想自着. You know what is 妄想? Heedless thinking and attachment. If you don't have this heedless thinking and attachment, you will be Buddha straight away. So that is the meaning. So it's to see this. Why my mind still got a lot of this thinking going on? Why do I have so much of this attachment? 自着, the meaning in Mandarin is very strong, very, very wide-ranging. 自着 is not only attachment. All of your craving, your desire, they are part of craving, part of that 自着. Because whenever you have this desire, this craving, this like and dislike, your mind actually is distracted. It will go up because of this craving. You want things, you want to own things, you want to possess things. So you have to see with mindfulness the mundane mind that behaves that way. Who is this mundane mind? Without the wrong view, the evil root will not be there. This wrong view that conditioned them to become like that is because every day they stir and react to sense experience, like and dislike, means they are creating mental hindrances every moment. At every moment of sense experience they arise. So if you do it until so habitual, until throughout the day also the mental hindrance there, then I ask you one very simple question. If you are full of mental hindrance, how can your mind be quiet? How can your mind be silent and still? Correct now? Because it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So what is important is to understand this. If I don't reverse all this through cultivating the five spiritual faculties or through training my mind, this heedless thinking will continue. And when it is there, I cannot meditate because it will hinder my mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. And this is very important. When you understand this, you focus on training your mind. You focus on cultivating the spiritual faculty until they become unshakable. And then meditation becomes very easy. Automatic, your mind state is really like that, without the hindrance. Then there is nothing to make you think heedlessly or attach, crave and cling to things. The grasping, the craving, the desire all cease to be because you know these are all the phenomenal world, the world of consciousness, world of form, not real, dependent originating, condition arising, and there is hey no me, hey no you to attach, to cling, to hold, to possess. None of all this. So this wisdom will transform you and you become very different. And that is the real meditative training, the understanding. Okay? So focus on that. Sadhu to you. We should thank Mindy for that good question. Because a lot of people, they fail to understand. They are more interested in the experience. Then they try to go in and try to relate that to progress. No, I saw a lot of this, but during the early days, I cannot tell you all this. If I tell you all this, you will not be interested in meditation. Wow, you say daily mindfulness, not easy, Lord, Brother Teo. To be aware also, in the formal meditation also cannot do, in the daily life, how to do? I got so much responsibility. My senses are fully operational. Yeah. You have to do it in that situation. If you cannot do it in that situation, means the Buddha said, you are heedless. And the heedless are as if dead. Means every moment when you go out into life, you are heedless. You don't stand a chance. The heedless are as if they're very clear. So you cannot be heedful in the midst of life. Your meditation cannot progress. So you have to determine to have this mindfulness stabilized, then bring it into the daily life. Then you can only stabilize all this if you have the initial wisdom to see how your wrong view and your mental conditioning make you heedless. And then you start to reverse all this by straightening your views. Actually, you are cultivating the four foundation of mindfulness already at that time. Because when you start to see your mental hindrance, that is the first Dhammanupassana practice. So when you are aware of your mental hindrance, means your mind has stirred and created this mental hindrance. Why is stirred? Because you lack mindfulness. You lack the spiritual faculty of Sada, Virya, Siddhi, Samadhi, and Panya. So develop this. Then you can reverse all this. Then the mental hindrance, the moment it ceases to be, like that last Thursday class recording, how many of you listened to it? How many of you listened? Nobody listened. One or two. If you are at the far, you listen, you will know. This Eric, I tell you, I just talked to him and he understand it then. And you know what happened to him or not? He said, nowadays, not only like the fear, the phobia last time that affected him, the suicidal thought, he like completely free, you know, like unplugged now. Nowadays, he say, last time he used to be very tired, very sleepy, very fast. And the panic attack, the fear, the phobia, all couldn't come. And I told him these are wrong thoughts. Wrong thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, then through memory, your panic attack and all things. So these are negative tendencies that hinders your mind from having the clarity, from entering the meditative state. That's why you cannot meditate, you cannot do your work, you cannot be efficient, and a lot of things will be affected by this wrong thought. So through this understanding, then I explained to him how this wrong thought creates all his suffering. I said, if you don't want this, you should reverse all this. We are telling yourself it's just a thought. Impermanent, it come and it go, arise and pass away. How come it has such power to make you so miserable? It's because through your delusion you allow the thought to give you such problem. You give such power to this thought, and through delusion you think the wrong thought and you get yourself into trouble. Your life, you decide. You hold the key to your own life destiny, to be happy or to be unhappy, entirely depend on you. I say, you believe the thought that is attachment, that is craving, that is clinging, where your memory hold on to it, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. Then I even share Byron Katie with him. If you believe the thought, what happened? You become miserable. You have gone through this for so many years. But if you don't believe the thought, before all this, during the early year, you were peaceful. Your mind is beautiful. Because you don't project, you don't create all this wrong view, the fear, worry, anxiety, all these wrong thoughts are not there. You are beautiful. So the moment you don't believe the thought, you are free. Because without those wrong thoughts, who are you? What are you? You are peaceful, you are calm, you are just aware, mindful, confident. Then she realized, this is true. Then she applied what Bhayan Kathy and what I teach him. Yeah, not real, because impermanent, come and go. The moment is gone, it's gone. How come it has power over me? Because he through memory recall, understand? Through memory, the views, the opinion, the conditioning come back. He didn't straighten his view. I say, you are beautiful. Without all this, you are beautiful. That's why he learned to meditate. But he didn't really meditate in the sense like you all go retreat. No, he just come for Thursday class, he's silent, he relaxed, he just follow instruction. Then he realized he becomes so different. He developed back his ability to have the confidence and all those things. And not only the whole thing like unplugged, he felt freedom. Means no more of those wrong thoughts, no more of those panic attacks and fear and all those things. He felt for the first time in his life for 1 week, he experienced the peacefulness, the calmness, the silence within, the awareness. And he was full of joy because he was in it for 14 years, depression, half of his life. So he has this faith, he determined he want to come out, then he came out. Then after that he realized, now he can perform so well. Whatever the company give to him, he can see it so clearly and he can do it with such clarity, understanding and efficiency. And the most amazing was, he said, last time he used to be tired very fast, then he need to rest. Then all these negative minds, they always come and haunt him. Now he can wake up very early and continue to read and understand those topics that he wants to understand with such clarity of mind until late at night he's not tired. The energy level has improved. And I explained to him why. Because the mental hindrance no more. That's why he went direct into all this. Because he has been in depression. And he understands what I say, because all this, according to him, the first 2 Thursday class, when he listened attentively, he said, Brother Teo, 100% hit. Everything you say like you are saying to me. That was exactly what happened to him. Then he realized all these are wrong thoughts that make him miserable, depressed, lack of confidence. So he determined to develop the spiritual faculty. That's why he went back, he read Dhamma book. Then he listened to my recording. Then he reversed all this. That's how he was able to come out of it so fast and now develop such amazing progress. According to him, he himself is amazed by what happened. And he don't believe he can just in less than 2 months. Earlier was within a month. Such tremendous change can happen. So it's not the old way where you are subject to all the conditioning, doing all those things that never really improve your meditation. But you didn't solve the problem. To solve the problem is to understand what constitutes wrong thought, like the Buddha said. Then you have to abandon it. Prevent it from arising. Then cultivate right thought. That's what he did. He determined to have love. Love himself. If you don't have love, you don't love yourself, you cannot love others. If you love yourself, you won't harm yourself. You won't arise the wrong thought, the negative thought to make yourself miserable. He saw all this. That's why he doesn't do that anymore. He developed gratitude, contentment, gentleness, pleasantness, the approach to life, different. That's how he trained. That's what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. Right view, law of karma. Then I even warned him. I say, once you have this transformation, you don't be complacent. If you don't take care of karma, you simply do things, it will come back to you. All this wrong thought or the mental hindrance will come back to you. Because the law of karma is very powerful. And you are able to overcome all this for the time being because of your good karmic conditioning from the past. You have this ability to understand. I was so surprised, after the first 2 Thursday class, he asked Sui An to make an appointment for him to see me. Then he came to my house. He came at about 3 p.m. or slightly after 3 p.m. And he stayed on listening to me, asking questions until 7 something, 3 hours plus. Or 3 to 4 hours like that, I think. So what happened was, during that time, he can absorb, he can understand what I try to explain because of the first 2 Thursday class and what he went through. Half of his lifetime, about 14 to 15 years, was in depression. With suicidal thought every day. He tried to seek answer, he cannot find. He went to motivational course. He went to motivational seminar. He see people. He see monk, he see everybody. He even went to the Christian church, do Bible study for 1 year plus. Doesn't help. We had the pastor talk to him, he said the pastor don't understand him. But when he came to me, like everything I explained, it's not only I understand him, it's what he went through. That's why he became very different and he had faith. And when he had that faith, he listened, I realized he can understand me so fast. That's why Sui An texted me, how was the meeting? I said, I think he got no more problem. His problem all resolved already. Well, he can understand what I say. and he can relate and he can apply. Then every time when I see he has the ability, I say, okay, now you listen. Then I teach him some other understanding or skillful means. And he becomes so different within such a short period of time. Where he was listening attentively and he was doing what I told him to do. And the good thing about him is he don't have Buddhist teaching before this. He doesn't know anything about the Dhamma. But he start to pay attention to the Dhamma. He start to read up on what is Dhamma. And that will help him. So meditation can be very simple when you understand. Can follow now. It's not what you do through sitting without understanding. Because that one, really, I already said many times, you can be wasting your time for many, many years. 10, 20, 30 years doing the same thing without progress. So what he did was, he cultivated Noble Eightfold Path straight away. He determined to have the spiritual faculty. He determined to abandon the wrong thought. He doesn't want to allow it to condition him again. Then he always reason and tell himself, it's just a thought, come and go, impermanent, not real. What is real is, I must know this law of karma. Take care karma, karma take care of my life. So how he take care karma? Keep the precept, avoid all evil. That's how he take care karma. There's no more negative thought, no more negative speeches and actions. Then he trained his mind to have right thought, right speech, right action. Then straighten his view to accept people for what they are, to have gratitude, to have contentment, to have love, then to have good mind state. Then he realized his character, his personality changed. And not only him, his friend that came to the class after he invited them to come and share with them. They all testify. There was one thing I remember. He said, "Brother, you know why I come and meet you or not?" He said, "Because I saw Eric. I know him very long already." He said, "We have been friends." He was in such miserable state. And I saw him within a month or so, completely changed person. He is now so confident. So full of positive energy, and so happy. So last time was complete reverse. He said, because of that, I want to know who are you, and what did you share with him. That's why after that, he also become interested in the Dhamma. So all these things, when you have a free mind, or open mind, you can absorb. That's why forget about your old conditioning, your old way of doing things. Just ask yourself sincerely, how can I understand the Buddha Dhamma, the true teaching, and how can I put it into practice and progress? It doesn't need long. When you understand, immediately you progress, and your life will change. So this is what Dhamma is all about. It's about understanding, not about experience. Experience are not important. But if you learn from life experience, that is true learning. To me, learning means you know how to see the Dhamma within life. The life itself is your greatest teacher. Because within life, the Dhamma, the truth exists. The law of karma exists. The conditioned world has the characteristics. That's why the teaching is all related to the conditioned world. And when you realize enlightenment, you realize the unconditioned. That understanding of the unconditioned will actually free you and make you very different. So that you can live in the conditioned world and yet not affected by the conditioned world. Because not so real, not what you think. So all this teaching will unfold by itself and you will develop the understanding. Okay? Sadhu. Oh, okay. Another 2 more minutes. Anybody got any meditation to report or ask any question? If don't have, then maybe we end. Okay. So we will do the sharing of merit, transfer of merit. master, then you can make your aspiration. Then after that, we end. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed for the last 3 hour session. And may all this wholesomeness be shared with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakkantu loka sasana itta wata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the other worthy ones. Thank you.